Good evening, everyone. For those of you in the room, we have close to 14 people in the room. We also have our managing director and our CFO joined us. And we have about 20 odd who have joined us online. So thank you all for joining. It's 4 p.m. And we'll start the presentation. Without further ado, a few housekeeping rules. One is we will be recording. We will be recording this conversation, and the presentation and the transcript as well as the audio recording will be available on the website. And of course, you can ask us and we'll be happy to share that with you too, just in case you're unable to access the website. I know it's been a while. I think it's been over 2 years since we had our last analyst meet thanks to COVID, but we're back again and hopefully COVID will be here. Great. Okay, it is being recorded. Perfect. Let me kind of with a warm welcome to those online as well as here. We will follow a format which is really an overview by our managing director, followed by a financial overview by our CFO. And then, of course, we will take questions. Before I invite our managing director, a few words. I mean, all of you know Sridhar joined us just before COVID. He joined us from his role in Singapore, and he's now with GSK India for close to more than 2 years. The new addition, for those of you who haven't met Juby has joined us very recently as a CFO. He's a chartered accountant from the Institute of Chartered Accountants of India. And his previous experience includes roles such as finance director, leader roles in Southeast Asia, Vietnam, Turkey, and Middle East. Just immediately prior to this, he was head of finance, general global medicine, and was based in Singapore. So welcome, Juby. And with that, I would now hand it over to our managing director, Mr. Sridhar Venkatesh, to take you through the overview of GSK.
Be here, Shani. Okay, all right. So great to be here. Welcome. Fantastic to meet all of you face to face. I mean, we've been doing this in a small box for many, many years, and I was looking forward to do this once before my tenure ends at GSK India at some point of time face to face. But good to be here. And for all those who are online, a warm welcome to all of you. What I promised to you that we will spend most of our time today on Q&A. We'll take probably around 10 to 15 minutes to talk about that. And now we have total 1 hour, 15 minutes is what we have. And we will use potentially an entire hour to try and respond to you and respond to your Q&A, right? So I personally think for us at GSK, it's never been more exciting time than for us where we are today, because globally, we've made a huge stand in terms of what we are going to be, what are we going to do, what therapeutic areas. And I think globally, we've taken a stance around after the successful split that we have had between our pharma and our consumer team in terms of what's our clear purpose. I think the more and more you talk about what's happening across the world, it's all becoming a confluence of science, technology, and talent. And that's something, and you need the right kind of people, the right places for us to be successful. So I personally think when I look at some of our global statements that we are making, some of the steps that we have taken, be it post our demerger, if I were to call, all of them have been pointing in this direction. Some of the newer acquisitions that we have made, some of the, be it in the space of oncology, be it in space of newer vaccines, all have pointed towards that. Now, clearly, as we look at that, what we also want to do through that is to impact around 2.5 billion patients in over 10 years and positively impact through our portfolio. Now, where are those 2.5 billion patients going to come? I mean, you can't think about, you can't take out India out of that equation when we talk about 2.5 billion patients. Some bit of rough calculations that we have done. Around 60% of the 2.5 billion will be out of India. So a huge part, I can say, of the global GSK purpose will be played out of what we do it in India. And you will see in terms of our ambitions, in terms of what we are attempting to do with our newer portfolios. And clearly, this is also a company where we want everybody to be themselves, really enjoy what they want to do, and thrive in their work that we want to, that they really love to do. So that clearly is our overall purpose and what we are attempting to create globally and what we are attempting to do in India. Now, what does that mean to India when we talk about this, right? And when we say we want to be ambitious for patients, what does that mean? We want to bring innovation into this country. What does that mean for us in India? Nucala was the first one that we talked about. We just launched Trelegy in the last few months. We are gearing up to launch a world leading vaccine, which is just path breaking again in terms of in the treatment of shingles, right? If anybody knows what shingles is, one of the most painful disease that anybody can get. We have 10-year data to showcase that this is one of the best vaccines. In terms of our, when we say accountable for impact, we mean how can we maximize the portfolio that we have? I'll show you some data out there which will clearly articulate how we are being accountable for impact in terms of the portfolio that we have by gaining share and still being relevant to a marketplace. Of course, underpinning that by saying we do the right thing at all times, right? And that's been something that's been absolutely, we have zero tolerance and no compromises towards, you know, on that particular space. Let me very quickly go to what GSK India means to globally at GSK. We are the second highest contributor to emerging markets, okay? So clearly, I keep telling my team that when India gets cold, my boss gets fever, right? Because we are a huge part of our overall portfolio. We also contribute greatly to many of the key brands that we have, right? Be it Augmentin, they are 17% of the emerging markets. Flu, Derma, we are on 45-50% of emerging markets. Clearly a huge portfolio, and we clearly feel that in India we still have a long way to go with our dermatology portfolio. Now, as we look at this portfolio for us and GSK India moving forward, clearly the goals that we have are pretty simple. Products that we have today are very relevant. And what do we need to do with them? Continue to grow faster than the market. Have an evolution index greater than 100. Secondly, what Jubi is focused on and all of us are focused on, as we grow, how do we continue to improve on those margins? And you will see some examples of what we are doing with Jubi's presentation. Vaccines is something we are extremely excited about. As we speak today, the cohort is around 24 to 25 million. The birth cohort in India is 24 to 25 million, right? And if you see, one of the most penetrated pediatric vaccine in this country is a pneumococcal vaccine, which gets to 1 million kids. The most penetrated vaccine, right? And I'm not talking about the national immunization vaccine. Sorry, don't get me wrong. So the national immunization vaccine gets you around 80-85%, right? So forget, I'm not talking about that. But I'm talking about those vaccines which are outside of the NIP. And clearly, some of these vaccines are real, you know, path-breaking vaccines which can be used by a lot many more patients. So we are very excited about that category of the patients. Adult vaccination, what COVID has done is expose that space significantly. And if you look at our portfolio, starting with Shingrix, we have flu, plus some of the other globally you might have heard about RSV. Again, that's something, it's still under regulatory approval. All of those vaccines are going to be, again, open up the entire space in the adult vaccination space. And that's something we really want to grow for us ourselves in the future. And we think that's a big space that we will grow. Specialty, of course, Nucala and Trelegy. Nucala, again, is a very niche indication, but Trelegy is, again, doing exceptionally well globally. We've just started that in India. We have had some very good early uptake on Trelegy. This is the indication that we have is for COPD, and we clearly have we clearly think this could be another big product for us over a period of next couple of years. How have we been doing? You might have heard me say earlier on, the three things that we want to do: build, grow, and shred. Build new assets, muscles that we don't have. That's what Nucala is. That's what Trelegy is. That's what Shingrix is going to be. Grow on some of the assets that we have. What can we do to ensure that we simplify our operations, do what is right, focus on those core brands, and continue to grow that. And shred some of the things that you might have seen, some decisions that we have taken over a period of time. fundamentally, we want to take away the drag. And that's what we've been attempting to do. I'm not saying that we are done with that journey. That's a continuous process, but we have taken some significant steps on the shred piece. So what I'm trying to say here is we've gained market share in our key promoted brands, right? Overall, even during COVID, we grew some of that market share. There was a fear that post that COVID, we will drop all that market share. Everything will go away when the other generics come back. In fact, we have held on to that market share. And if we, our projection is by the end of the year, we'll actually gain through that because this is the key season for us from our acute portfolio. And we possibly are going to see that market share kind of grow. We continue to lead in our represented market. And we are, we, as we say, we are number one dermatology player in the self-pay market. We continue to be there. We have prescription leadership for our core portfolio, be it in GPs, ENTs, pediatricians. We continue to hold that prescription share position. And some of our core brands, we continue to maintain that number one position in the represented market. Vaccines, we've been doing a huge amount of effort activities. And now I'm not sure any of you got exposed. This is all about creating more awareness regarding vaccination. There were a lot of kids who did not get vaccinated during the period of COVID. We were right out there talking about what more can be done. But of course, a lot of awareness across the various digital forums, doctors' clinics, many other places we created so that people understand what vaccination is all about and especially support them in their whole vaccination journey. This is all about pediatric vaccines. Building specialty, I talked about Nucala. We continue to be encouraged. We launched Nucala during, you know, right before the perfect storm, which COVID hit us. And during that time, it was pulmonologists were rightly so super focused on treating COVID patients, right? So, but overall, and therefore we saw the uptake that we saw earlier on was not exactly the way we would have liked it. But again, very happy to say post-COVID, well, I can't say post-COVID, right now, whatever it is right now, I'm starting to see very good acceleration. Similarly with Trelegy, we see a good acceleration. It was, again, a unique launch, a physical and a digital. And again, pulmonologists seemed excited about a device which is once a day. And clearly, a lot many patients, I mean, physicians have, pulmonologists especially, have taken this brand. Shingrix, we are getting ready to launch this in the first half of 2023. That's the broad, I would say, the commercial part of what we are doing in the business. I'll hand it over to Juby, who will quickly walk you through some numbers, facts, and figures. And as I promised, we will be done in the next 8-10 minutes, and then we'll open the entire hour for Q&A with all of you. Juby.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Sridhar. So the next couple of minutes, I'll take you through the high-level financials. And also, I'll articulate some of the progress what we are making over the last couple of years. So firstly, this is a quick snapshot of 2022. If you see, our sales is at 3190 crores and 11% growth. Now, what's really important is our price as well as our volume, both are growing. And each pillars of our portfolio, promoted brands, which is growing around 25%, which is where we are more focused on. All our brands which are promoted, all our resources are allocated into those brands. And that's demonstrating a strong progress in terms of growth. General medicine, which forms part of the entire pharmaceutical brands, which is growing 19%. Specialty, which is the new Nucala and all the new assets where we are getting new products launched. That's growing 86%, almost doubling last year. Vaccines, a decline of 9%. Again, vaccines, as you know, during COVID times, there was decline in number of babies visiting the hospitals. And that's a temporary blip we could see in the market. And again, if you see the growth on some of our core brands, Calpol, Augmentin, Suprasaf, all are demonstrating very strong growth. Right-hand side, you can see the margins, 59% margin on a large base, improving our ratio by another 3%. PBT, 24%. Again, improving on a large basis, the ratio, another 2%. EBITDA also improved 3% from 20 to 23. And dividend, we are consistently declared in the past. This is a quick snapshot of the quarter results which you have seen. The reported growth was 3%, as you could see, but if you see the underlying growth here is excluding the impact of Calpol, which had a higher base last year due to COVID. It's 12% underlying growth. That's coming from 6% price and 6% volume. So the underlying growth is very strong. And if you see all the pillars of our portfolio, general medicine, specialty, and vaccines, all the three pillars are showing very strong growth. And that's giving us confidence that our strategy is working. Our promoted brands, as you could see, the market share has got improved. And all the three pillars, the underlying growth is very, very strong. And we are continually focusing on gross margin and EBITDA, which you will see in the next slide also, where also we have demonstrated improvement. And those who are following this closely, we are on a seasonal business. Quarter one of the financial year tends to be the lowest quarter, and September ending quarter will be the highest quarter due to seasonality. And this is a trend which you could see during the past years. And just to bring you up to speed on what are we talking about our strategy. Over the last two, three years, we've been doing several things that is demonstrating in our financials. If you see the three parts of our financials, revenue, gross margin, and EBITDA, all the three are showing strong improvement. Revenue has grown 8%. If you see gross margin, despite all the headwinds we had in the market, it's grown 2%. Ratio has grown 2% from 57.6 to 59.4. And EBITDA, if you see 5% improvement. So now the EBITDA is from gross margin improvement almost 1.8%. Employment costs, where we are finding efficiencies, we are focusing on promoted brands where it makes sense. That's again giving us a 2% improvement, and also cost efficiencies. We're continuously working on cost efficiencies, and that's also giving us a strong uptake in our EBITDA margins. Now, just to bring you for the last 5 years, what's happening on our portfolio, the left-hand side is the reported numbers. Reported numbers has got divestments excluded on the last year, but the base has got some discontinued divested brands. But if you see the five-year CAGR on the continuing portfolio, like-to-like across all the years, which is the real underlying growth, general medicines, 9% growth, vaccines, 10%, specialty, again, it's double-digit growth, 100% growth. It's on a small base. And we are consistently delivering very, very strong cash flow. And that's why we could declare dividend also year on year. So the bottom line, the story I'm trying to make here is our underlying growth, despite the divestments, despite the headwinds we have, is very strong in our financials. So lastly, this is my last slide. I just want to bring you again to context. With all these changes, what we're making in the last couple of years, if you see our EBITDA margins, it started at 16% on the left hand. Now, as we speak in the last reported financials, it's 23%. So a strong improvement has been made across all the years. Consistent improvement, if you see, across all the years on EBITDA margins. And that's on the backdrop of several initiatives we were doing. One is the cost efficiencies we are trying to do, the focus on promoted brands where it matters. We were reallocating our resources. We were discontinuing some brands which doesn't make sense for us, which Sridhar was articulating about, the new products. And as we move forward, what we try to do, we continue to do well some of the things which were working, which is like growing our promoted brands, growing our focus brands, which has got better margin mix. WPI price increase, which we will be playing out. We will have challenges in terms of NLEM price cuts, but our WPI price increases will be going to help us. New products, the new launches, that is going to again drive growth. And also we'll continue to focus on cost savings. So basically we expect to sustain this EBITDA margins as we go forward and try to further improve upon them. So over to you, Sridhar, to close the call.
So, look, as I just want to also talk about, as we've been chugging through this, we've also been very proud of how the teams have been. You can leave it there. We've also been awarded quite a few awards across in terms of one of the best workplaces. I mean, you can get a sense of what happened when you walk in. You put in a huge amount of effort. Working women, risk awards. I mean, overall, very proud of what we've been able to get. And at the end of the day, we never forget that we are here for patients. Every year, we touch around 200 million patients through our medicines, which is a significant number. We do around, I mean, our medicines touch around 6 million immunizations. Again, never forget that. That's a core of what we do. That's why we come here on a day-to-day basis to work for. That's what keeps us going on an ongoing basis. With that, I think, as I promised, we'll be done in 15 minutes, and hopefully we have enough time for Q&A.
Thank you, Sridhar and Juby. May I request you to kindly take the mics and also be seated. We can be, yeah. Okay. We will now open up for questions. The format will be as follows. Those online, kindly raise your hand and the moderator will then unmute and call on your name, and then you can shoot the question that you have. Please introduce yourself, your name, which organization you are from, and specifically if you'd like the question to be posed to either Juby or to Sridhar. Before we start, I think the first preference will then be given to people in the room, because obviously you guys have taken the time out from your busy schedule. So those of you who would like to raise a question here, kindly come forward, because we can then give you a mic or we can pass on the mic to you. If any of you are thinking in the meantime, let me start with a question that came via email from Sanjeev Vaidyanathan, partner, Eternity Capital. He's put in a set of three questions. What is the long-term outlook for growth, margins, and returns for the business? It would be ideal if you can split this outlook by business segment, pharma, chronic, acute versus vaccine, self-pay, sponsored. So, Juby, may I request you to respond to that question?
Thank you. I think, firstly, the chronic versus acute, our business is more acute. We got only 5% chronic segment, which is only one brand, mainly Eltroxin. So majority of our business is from acute business. Now, in terms of guidance, forward guidance, as you know, we are not providing forward guidance. Our business is, on the past performance you would have seen, last year we're growing 19% on the promoted brands, and last 5 years we demonstrated the growth. Do you want to add anything?
No. Look, the question sounds like how I probably am presenting to my boss out there, right? 5 years growth, buys flat. No, but look, fundamentally, just to give you a perspective, you saw the bets that we are making. The bets that we are making is a focused portfolio. We've grown double digits. Our thinking is we can. India is a broadly underpenetrated market. We have an opportunity, so we'll potentially go in that direction. The big growth that we will potentially see is in our new launches. Especially we think of when we launch Shingrix, we think that should be a hugely growing space. In terms of our pediatric business, as I said, we have a 26 million growth cohort, 1 million most penetrated vaccine, 4 million patients who are in the SECA category who can afford some of these private vaccines. So look, I mean, you can do your math, but it's in my mind, it is, I think we are here for considerable future growth with most of our portfolio. We will remain focused on the portfolio that we have, but we think there is a massive opportunity with what we have right now.
Thank you, Juby. Thank you, Sridhar. The next question, so this is the second of part three questions. What are the competitive advantages that you have and continue to build on, which allows you the above long-term visibility? It would be great if you can explain how these advantages compare to those of your most relevant competitors.
Look, I think the way I look at that is the biggest advantage that I have is I have the entire GSK landscape to play. The amount of innovation that is coming through GSK at a global level, be it oncology, rheumatology, vaccines, adult vaccines, anti-infectives, it is huge, right? And I have the power of bringing all of those into the Indian market. And to me, that innovation is something that's going to drive, number one. Number two, I think even though I have products like Augmentin and Calpol, which incidentally saved the most lives during COVID, it was not the vaccines helped, but Calpol is the one which saved the most lives during COVID time by a small pill. These products are still extremely relevant. And these products have become a household name. And we think there is an opportunity to continue to grow these brands. The strength of the brands, the equity that these brands command, right, is significant, is very, very significant. We also have an opportunity to continue to generate local data on some of these molecules. So somebody thought Augmentin is a 50-year-old brand. We still continue to bring data on antimicrobial resistance. What is happening? We invest a lot. And some of those things, I think, are real competitive advantages. So the strength of the brand, the relevance of the brand, the future of the portfolio, and newer areas that we think clearly are I think, the competitive advantages that we have in GSK India.
Thank you. Thank you, Sridhar. Last question of part three. What is the best way to understand the difference in operation of GSK Pharma listed entity and GSK Asia unlisted subsidiary? In that context, why was Iodex Osteocalcium originally sold through the listed entity but transferred last year to GSK Asia?
Okay. I'll leave it to the expert.
So, firstly, I think all our sales are through the listed entities. Okay, 100% of our sales are through the listed entities. GSK Asia, which in the question is the consumer arm of GSK, which is not a subsidiary, which is not part of pharma business. It's a completely different entity. And the Osteo-Idex sales we have updated in the public domain in the stock exchanges as part of the new GSK when pharma and consumer split globally. The consumer brands moved to the consumer division, and that's part of this transfer of Osteo-Idex to the GSK Asia, which is a consumer entity. So it's completely a different business, nothing to connect it with this pharma entity here.
Okay, thank you. So we'll open up for folks here. He had raised his hand first, then I'll come to you. Just introduce yourself, your name, the company, and your question posed to whom.
Thank you so much. So I'm Amir from Haitong. The first question is on the vaccines, basically. So last year was not good for us in terms of growth in the vaccine category. So if you can tell whether the post-COVID the normalization has happened already in the vaccine market, and what with the outlook for the vaccine sales in FY23, and along with that, if you can also highlight the key products on the vaccine category which you would be focusing on, especially in the adult side. The Fluarix is the vaccine which has good potential in India, and your competitor has already started doing a lot of ads on the radios and etc. So what we are doing to basically compete with them, and also on the outlook of Shingley's vaccine, how big that opportunity could be. Thank you.
Look, I'll attempt to give you how the market doing. Market is still sluggish. Okay, so it's still in negative space. A lot of that has got to do with people either postponing vaccines. I talked about the SCCA categories, etc. We don't have those data, but I'm sure you have seen those anecdotal reports of birth rates coming down a little bit in some of these places. That has all had an impact. As I said, the market is still around minus 10, minus 12 category. That is where they are. Of course, we continue to hold our share. So while the market is declining, if you're holding our share, means we are gaining share from our competitors. So which clearly means as we still are a key relevant part of that. So in terms of future outlook, it'll a lot be dependent upon how, as I said, it takes, you know, most of our vaccines are 0 to 1. So for that, we need more kids to be out there. There is a time for kids up post all of this. There is a cycle. So we remain hugely optimistic based on some of the lead indicators that we see in hospitals, etc. So we think this is going to come back. Remain absolutely committed on that particular space. You talked about Florex of adult vaccine. Yes, Florex is clearly one. And of course, Shingrix in the future. We've been very pleased with what we have done with Florex. And I think IMS and IQVIA do not do justice to what we do, what we sell. But look, I'm not here to talk. I mean, you've seen those numbers in how we report, but clearly, we are, what we've been able to do in the last 2 years has been really significant. Probably I need to see which channels you see, and I need to get my ads in front of you. There are a lot of those we do too, especially the ones recently you might have seen. They are not ads. Let me clarify myself. We don't do ads. We never do ads. What we do is disease awareness campaigns. Okay, so they were the disease awareness campaigns all around getting flu, and you would also the fact that the current strains also protect you against H1N1. So you might have seen some of those. So yes, we do a lot of those activities. Future outlook of Shingrix. Look, I'm not going to sit here and speculate. I can give you the indication. Okay. Indication is 50 years plus. Anybody needs that shot, right? We don't have the other indication yet in India, which is 18 plus immunocompromised. I don't have that indication yet in India, but anything 50 plus, people should be taking it. Will everybody take it? No. I mean, I don't know how many of you have taken flu shot here in the room or in the call. There is a little bit of an apathy about adult vaccine, and that calls for companies like us to spend more time on disease awareness. So that's something that you will see continuously us doing.
Great. The next question, I'll pass on the mic and maybe you can introduce.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. Nikhil Upadhyay from Securities Investment Management. Two, three questions. One is on the vaccine side. Yeah. If we look at last 2.5 years, what you mentioned is quite relevant, that the whole of the cohort has not been there, people were not going. But what we thought is that there would be a significant pent-up demand whenever the things start opening up. But even in the AGM, and you now also you mentioned that the market is still degrowing. So is it that something structurally has changed? Because what we have also seen, government has added also a lot more vaccines in the basket of, which was there. So is there anything structural which has changed, or is it still something which you believe is temporary?
So look, I think the government has taken some steps, right? And clearly there are a few patients who are going to private are going to the government category, right? So clearly around the pneumococcal space, there is some of that has happened. But I also think people have postponed quite a few decisions, right? So some of these vaccines that we are talking about are outside of your normal vaccines that you would take, right? So from an economic standpoint, people have postponed some of those decisions. There has been a pent-up demand, but it has not been as if everybody who has not taken that vaccine has come back up. And also clearly the birth cohort, we think there is a time people have postponed. Look, it has taken me really hard sometimes when I am speaking to my boss to say that marriages in India got postponed, therefore kids get postponed. And people don't understand that sometimes. And it's taken me time for me to make people understand that. So there is a cycle. We are seeing that cycle slowly turning around, right? There are, as I said, some lead indicators of other medicines that are used, which will help us tell us what's happening to the birth cohort, etc. But we have to be patient. I think it's going to take till end of the year for this to kind of bottom out. And I think slowly only next year, the market's potentially starting to come back up.
Second, if we look at last 10 years of GSK, we've seen, and one clarification you mentioned at the starting, before my tenure ends. So is it something closer to date?
So please, you know, there's nothing called everybody's tenure's end. Mine will end some point of time. That I was just making an off-the-cuff comment.
So if over the last 10 years from where you were handed over Glaxo as the MD, and what we've seen is that the company at the MR productivity level or at the growth level has been a laggard, and many of the smaller companies have taken market share from, and we were the leader at some point in the early 2010s. It was like Glaxo's MR productivity was the benchmark. So what has changed, and what structural changes you have brought in over the last 3-4 years, which gives you the confidence that probably now the things are set for us to probably benchmark or make benefit from the steps which we have taken?
A fantastic question. So look, I think 10 years ago, we were a different company. Our outlook was different. What we could launch in this country was different. The regulatory environment was different. The scientific proof of what the bar that GSK has for itself in terms of what I could launch was very different, right? So clearly, over a period of time, some decisions were made over, rightfully so. We are a global company. We have to kind of work through. One of the things that we have to understand is what products we can launch and what we cannot launch. And clearly, there were some decisions that were made in the last 8 to 10 years on which are the areas that we would focus on. Clearly, also the environment externally, some decisions like Zantac, Wemgal along the way have not helped us, okay, but they were all done for the right reasons. I mean, I'm not going to go back into that. So I think it's a little bit compared to some of the, and again, I'm not challenging the growth of other companies here. They have done what is right for them. It is good from their perspective. What was good for us was we needed to look at where do we want to play. We made that decision in terms of where we want to play. 10 years ago was a different space and a different time. The last couple of years and we are in this journey for 3 to 4 years. We are very clear about where we want to play. We are very clear about where we don't want to play. For example, if somebody were to say tomorrow, will you launch a product in diabetes? I can say yes sitting now. Absolutely not. Do I want to be in cardiovascular? No, that's not a space that I think I have innovation, that I think I can add value. There is enough people out there. So all the numbers that he was talking about is on those 7 or 8 therapeutic key products that we have, vaccines and innovation. I think you will start to see GSK India in the future, something like what we saw 8 or 10 years ago, but with a different set of products, different set of people, and a different, the shape of the P&L will look very different because the skills that I need for immunology, oncology, adult vaccine is going to be very different from what I need for a mass product, which I need another 2,000 people, right? So the shape of the P&L is changing. The shape of the business is changing significantly. I think we are somewhere 60% in that journey. As we get those products in, you will start to see this very differently.
Just one last, then I'll pass on. In this process, because if we look at 2015-16 also and go through our annual reports, we used to focus on the generic medicine, vaccines and specialty. And if we look at now, the way competition is, if a product goes off generic, there are 30-40 players who are competing, and also probably there is a good roadmap for a player like GSK to build the specialty pipeline to a much larger extent, create actual brands. For that to happen, how has the organization structure been created? Like for specialty, what is the kind of MR team? How is the team being divided, and what are the KPIs on which each of them being measured?
Yeah, look, clearly 4 years ago, we probably had one large team. Right now, if you were to see, we not only have, of course, we have a general medicines team and clearly structured under that multiple teams to focus on the various brands. But let's talk about vaccines. We have recently created a completely different team to focus on adult vaccine, which reports straight into me. So somebody who sits in the leadership team, a business today which has 0 rupees in sales, but we know that we need to focus on that. So there is a head of pediatric vaccine who reports into me. There is a head of adult vaccine who reports into me. So that's a clear investment for the future, including teams under them who are trying to get ready. Speciality, we brought in, as I said, we brought in somebody again, a head of speciality whose whole goal is to create this team. Right now, the team under him promotes Nucala and Trelegy. But again, as we are getting closer to oncology launches in this country, we will start to see, we'll put people 6 months, 9 months before, do one of the things that we show. It's as I said, I have now 4 commercial team members reporting to me, a general medicine, pediatric vaccine, adult vaccine, specialty, right? And there's somebody else who looks after the various emerging channels. So we are looking at all of this spectrum of portfolio. That's how we kind of structured. Of course, KPIs are very different in terms of what needs to be done across the. For some, it is the success of new launch. For some others, it is how quickly we can get a product into the market. For some others, it is how do you shape the market for the new launch. So they're pretty different.
Just why I stressed, sorry, but
why is the mic?
on the KPI side is like in the Focus brand, we've talked about Augmentin, Calpol, yes. Derma, but there are also products like Eltroxin where we were the leader.
Yes.
The market is still pretty strong, but yep. we've lost the leadership. So
yes.
is market share defending and ability to grow the product also an important part for the whole team?
100%, right? I mean, that is what we live and breathe for. And as I said, I'm not saying here that we won share. There are areas where we have won share. There are a couple of products we have lost. Eltroxin is one. But again, I have to say in the last 6 months, you will see it in a year's time. I start to see data much more closely. I think we are coming back on that space very strongly.
Hi, Anuj from M3 Investments. On the vaccines, on the pent-up demand, so if you look at your portfolio, what percentage of the vaccines demand will be permanently extinguished or perished because let's suppose the children go out of that age bracket. So any thoughts out there that it might not be a pent-up, it might be perished forever?
As I said, most of the vaccines are 0 to 1. I think if you look at, more than some of the vaccines that we are extinguished forever, I think the vaccines that we have, that we think we are not going to get back are some of those where people are going to the government sector, to the, you know, especially the pneumococcal space, which is really moving over to people who can afford to are moving over to that space. On the piece of what do I think people are not going to come back for vaccines, see, we think that's going to be a pretty small portion. It's not because if you see this, right, as I said, market was showing a negative 17-18%. We showed a negative growth of -3%. So we actually gained share in most of our key vaccines, right? So it's very difficult for me to say how much have we given what it is, how much have we completely lost. I think it'll be around a percentage here or two, a couple of percentage points, but I really don't want to sit here and hazard a guess that how much I would have completely lost.
All right. And the second question is, you know, just regarding pneumococcal, so Serum is competing with us directly. Is it completely playing in the government pay market or it's there in the self-pay market?
They are there in both. I mean, we are competing. I mean, look, we don't play in the NIP space at all.
Right.
So that's we are not there. They are there in the private space too.
Okay. So just anecdotally, the self-pay market as a percentage total vaccine market 5 years ago and today, is the self-pay market shrinking continuously?
Yes, absolutely. Right now, last 5 years. Look, last 2 years, as I said, it's been a high negative 18-20% decline, okay. Right? Last 2 years, it's been a decline. But I think this is, we think there are enough lead indicators for us to say that this is going to come back.
All right. One question on MR productivity. So, you know, if you look at the incentive structure in the last 3 years or 5 years, how are you directing the incentive structures to evolve? And for you to get the MR productivity to where you were, let's suppose.
So to me, I don't know if I will directly link incentives to MR productivity, right? So to me, MR productivity is a function of the relevance of my products, what I can do, where I can, right? So I can talk to specifically separately about my incentive structure. Incentive structure moved away from, it was at one point of time, you know, we had all reps, then it moved globally GSK moved to only at a second line sales leader level. From last year onwards, we have, you know, the targets right at the rep level, so incentivized at the rep level. So, look, there has been a journey, there has been a different set of things, but clearly we think our MR productivity, if you were to use that as a terminology, if I look at it within the operating space that I have, I think I'm pretty comfortable. When you look at, I have a set of products which I don't promote, which are there, that's when I think you start to see a different level of productivity. And it's a function of portfolio. My portfolio has shrunk significantly. As I said, be patient with us for a couple of, as I said, as I launch these new products, these numbers are going to change significantly.
Just to add, if you look at the total employment cost in the reported numbers, it's declined 1% despite we have an inflation of 8 to 10%, right? So that decline is a function of productivity, where we are rightly allocating our resource to where it matters. At the same time, providing for the inflation, our employment cost has not grown over the last 1 year.
And one last question, you know, if you theoretically could launch much more products from the global portfolio, but you're prioritizing. So what are the parameters you're prioritizing a launch versus others? So thanks.
So fundamentally, the need in the Indian market, right? I mean, not all products we could, we think, let me turn this around and say that most of the products that are coming out of the portfolio will be relevant for India, right? And we will launch, especially in the oncology space, vaccines, immunology space right now. But if there is a very high niche kind of a product which is a very rare disease, and right now I've not come across anything which I'm seeing there which I say I will not launch. Most of the products that we have in the near term portfolio we will launch, and as we speak today there are around, correct me if I'm wrong Satyajit, there are around 20-25 global clinical trials happening in India for various products, right? So and the intention that we are doing those trials is potentially we will launch them at the future. We have folks online
too. Yeah. So thank you for the opportunity. Just want to understand, if we look at the WPI benefit, has it flowed in the 1Q entirely, or we should see it in Q2 to be more specific? And what kind of price growth should we look at for the full year?
Yeah, if you see the quarter one published results, it's 6%. Price impact in the results. Full year, we could expect around 8 to 10% annualized price impact.
And if
it will flow through in the coming months.
And if we look at these price increase versus the cost inflations that we might have experienced in terms of our, raw material around, is there any set off that we should expect, or the number that you just mentioned we should refer to that?
Typically, what we are seeing in the market is two types of inflation. One is our raw material, which is the API inflation, as well as the packaging material and the aluminium. All those kind of stuff is used for our packaging in the factories. That's also the inflation is happening. So we expect around 2 to 3% cost increase due to inflation happen. Price increase of course will add as a cushion to sustain our margin levels, as I explained. So it's not going to have a material dent in the margin as we speak, because it's coming around 2 to 3% cost inflation happening, and a price increase is going to help us there.
And if you can explain the volume growth, I mean, we are talking about 6% volume growth, which is significantly higher than the overall IPM volume growth. So what is it that is driving these kind of, are these only mass, or is there any contribution? Because as we were discussing around the vaccine portfolio being weak, and we expect it to come back, say, only by end of this year. So how should we look at it? And with that, if we look at the EBITDA margin also, because I remember our earlier conversation wherein EBITDA margins for vaccines are much lower and at an arm's length basis. So how should we, because that indicates that our EBITDA margin should be much higher. But of course, we have seen a dent in this 1Q.
Look, I mean, we're getting our growth, as I said, there was a natural transition towards key known brands during COVID, and everybody expected once, and of course we were able to keep our supply chain running, everything happened, and we gained share. Now people thought we were going to lose share during that. It didn't happen, though, that brand has stayed. So I think that momentum is helping us. We are fully back. We were first to get back into the field. So all of that plus the relevance of our brand. So it's fundamentally the mass products which is helping us, you know, get those volumes out there. Now, Also, the vaccines coming back is of course going to have an impact. So I don't know what was the second question there about. Well, I'm not going to comment on a future margins, but
yeah, I think if you see the mix of a pharma versus vaccine, so pharma products are around 78 and vaccine is 22% of our portfolio. And pharma is also growing much faster than vaccines. Okay, so the margin is not going to dilute just because vaccine is going to come. Vaccine has relatively lower margin, but the ratio will maintain because pharma is growing on a larger base at much higher rate. So yeah, so it's a lower portion of our total sales, hence the margins will sustain.
So I will go online just so that I'm not ignoring the folks who've joined online. Those of you who have a question, kindly raise your hand. The moderator will kind of allow you to ask your question. Just introduce yourself. Okay, Dheeraj Pathak, can you introduce yourself, from which organization you are, and your question? Moderator, if you can unmute Dheeraj Pathak.
Yes, thank you. Am I audible?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
Go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. I am from White Oak Asset Management. I have 2-3 questions. First is on, are there any more OTC type brands like Ostocalcium or Iodex which might transfer later on, or now the portfolio is just prescription brands and there is no OTC?
I hope I had and I would have made some money out of it, but no, there aren't any more at this moment.
Okay. On pneumococcal vaccine, Synflorix, is that vaccine part of the NIB program, or it is yet to be part of the NIB program?
No, Synflorix as a brand is not a part of NIP program. I mean, pneumococcal has got introduced. We are not a part of that NIP program.
No, so just to understand that part properly, so when they say pneumococcal is part, so the same formulation and the strains that is in Synflorix, that is part, but you are not participating in the NIB program. Is that what you mean?
So there is a competing molecule from other company, which is a part of that NIP program. They see, look, you can never say this is exactly the same. They have some strains here and there. But yes, they all have the same indication as given by the drug controller, which is for the pneumococcal space. And we are not, you're right, we are not a part of the NIP program.
So the broader question that I wanted to ask there was that if our molecule, if that vaccine comes under NIP, in the private market, do we have to reduce prices, or the prices are free in the private market? Even if the vaccine is part of the NIP and we are not participating ourselves in the NIP program, in the private market, do we have to match prices? Does it come under price control in some ways, the question?
I don't think these are completely different topics. So NIP is a program run by the government. You can choose to participate in it. There are some clearly laid out conditions. There is, and then you compete. Think of it as a tender, right? A tender for the country. So we cannot compete in that tender for whatever reasons. So we are not a part of that tender. Now, private market is a completely different market. Everybody has their own prices, MRP. We are run by the rules of how much we can increase, what you can do. So these are two completely different parallel streams. They're not linked at all with each other.
Okay. And one last question, sir. Vaccine, you said, is 22% of the business. Then you gave like promoted brands and specialty. Can you also give their revenue share in the total business now?
Yeah. So total vaccine is 22% of the total business. Promoted brands makes roughly 62% of the pharma business. The rest of the 78%, around 62% is promoted brands. So totally including vaccines, we are talking about total portfolio, 80% is promoted.
Understood. Thank you.
Okay. Next question, Dhaval Shah has raised his hand. Hi, Dhaval. If you can pose your question, go ahead. Dhaval?
Yeah, hi. Good evening. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, you are. You are.
Yeah, hi. This is Dhaval Shah from Aditya Birla Sun Life Mutual Fund. Thank you for this analyst meet. So first question is, I just wanted to understand the market potential for your, you know, three specialty products, that is Nucala, Trilogy, and Shingrix. If you can just articulate what is the market potential that you're looking for each of these products?
Look, I think Nucala is a very niche indication. It's a biologic for eosinophilic asthma. I don't know if that market doesn't exist today. That biologic market doesn't exist. And I think broadly, you know, when I say it doesn't exist, it's a very, very small market. So we're talking about, you know, again, I don't want to sit here and talk about in crores, but you're talking about patients in thousands, who could potentially few thousands who could potentially take that. While you're talking about Trelegy is the entire COPD market, right? Now that to me is in, correct me if I'm wrong, if it's in around, is in a few thousand crores, right? So it's somewhere in that particular space. The third one was about, Shingrix again, the adult vaccine does not exist, market doesn't exist, but you know, anybody above 50 is at risk of, should be getting that vaccine, right? So we think some, you know, if again, the apathy around vaccine goes away, and like what you see in some of the other markets across, developed market across the world, you know, it's a potential is massive, right? So again, there is no, these are markets that we are creating, Dhaval. I mean, there is, as I said, we will be the market for some of these products.
Okay. Dhaval, any more questions?
Yeah, the second question that I have is on the derma market, and you know, that has also kind of got impacted because of COVID, and I just wanted to understand how much normalization has happened in that overall context, and how do you see that going forward?
Pretty much normalized. In fact, you know, I go by the metric of are my reps able to see the doctor walking in, or they wait for a few hours. So if they are walking in, business is not so great, though they're meeting their doctors, right? So right now I can see those doctors extremely busy. And I think that market's coming back significantly.
Okay. And the last one is on Synflorix. And I just wanted to understand what possibly Dhiresh was also asking is that, do you expect the private market, to grow this getting included in NIP in that overall sense? So would you expect private market growth to continue for Synflorix, say, over the next year and the next 3 years?
No, we see that declining, okay? And as I said, that's not a market. We are seeing that decline. There are patients who are moving over to the NIP. So I'm not expecting that market to have that pent-up demand and growth of what we saw in the past. There will be other vaccines which are coming back. We have the meningococcal vaccine, the Tdap, which is the Boostrix. We have, the 6-in-1s. But this one, I expect the private market to continue to decline.
Yeah. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sridhar. Thank you, Dhaval. We'll go to Gagan Thareja, who's raised his hand. Gagan, if you can go ahead and ask your question.
Yeah. Good evening. I hope I'm audible.
Yes, thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the first question is around the proposed changes to the NLEM list, where three of your products can, you know, additionally figure in T-Bax, Ceftum, and rotavirus. If that materializes, you know, what could be the impact on the pricing aggregate basis on all these three products, basis the pricing methodology followed under the NLEM?
Look, I'll wait for the government to come in to tell us the pricing. I am not going to speculate what would be the pricing, what would they would do. But what I can, if at all the price gets released and we have a direct impact, I can say that we have enough experience from the past of having gone through these turmoils and ensure that we come back in terms of our, you know, in certain cases volume, certain cases other productivity improvement measures. So, look, I clearly don't want to speculate on what price they would, what would happen. But whatever be the scenario, I think we are pretty much ready to kick on the button within 24 hours to do whatever needs to be done.
I'm sorry, sir. You were not audible for most of the comment.
Okay. Let me try and. I'm sorry. Am I okay now? Am I audible now?
Yes, you are audible now. Thank you.
Yeah, look, as I said, I am not. I don't want to speculate in terms of how much and what would be the price impact if at all that happens. I don't know what I don't know. whatever be the methodology, but you know, but let's, they said, irrespective of whatever happens, we've gone through the situations a few times in the past. We are ready to manage that carefully, what needs to be done in terms of volume expansion or whatever needs to be done. We are ready with that thinking. But I clearly don't want to go into that space of speculating what would be the amount of price impact on these products.
No, I understand that, sir. But could you give the salience of these three products in your portfolio today? I mean, what proportion of sales would these three constitute for you?
Yeah, so I can tell you Rotarex is as good as insignificant now. It's not a focus area. You're talking about Keftam, I mean, which is an important product for us. But again, in the larger scheme of things, it's less than a percent. And the other one is T-backed, which is again 2 to 3 percentage points.
Right. Last year you also indicated that the API for paracetamol had seen a very sharp increase, while you know the volumes of Calpol would have taken some sort of an impact because year on year last year, you know, you had the second COVID wave. In terms of input pricing, have things looked better this quarter, and also you would have taken some price increases on the final product as well?
Yeah, take it.
So I think, most of the raw materials, particularly paracetamol, has gone up roughly 20 to 25% in terms of cost inflation. Now, the good thing is we have long-term contracts with the vendors. We have signed long-term contracts on most of the APIs. So we got certain level of, you know, visibility in terms of how the cost is evolving. That's one thing. Yeah, so that's why, and also the price increase, both are kind of cushioning us. So you're not seeing that impact in the reported quarter also, in the last quarter also on the margins. We still see the margin improving. So we continue to have this kind of cost pressures, but we'll be carefully managing that.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the margin pressures remain. Okay, so let's see. The geopolitical situation around us is not improving for the short term. So we continue to watch it closely. Again, that's the strength of being a global multinational. We have scale and size to kind of globally look at some of these, especially some of our vendors. So that helps us a little bit. But Juby's bang on to say, right now the cost has helped us a little bit. But, I mean, the price increases have helped us a little bit, and the pressures remain.
Right.
So we'll go to the room. Yeah.
Hi, good evening, sir. I'm Satish Bhatt from Anvil Share and Stock Broking. I'm tracking your company from maybe 1992. So it's more than, I think, 3 decades. And during this phase, I think some of our past speakers have told that we were once leader and now we are not there to be seen in the, not to be recognized as a leader. You know, we become more of an acute company than a chronic company, you know. And the presentation which you made that you want to focus on the speciality, especially products like Nucala and Trelegy and whatever oncology portfolio you have. You haven't mentioned how fast you're going to introduce your product because your Niraparib is already, I think, out in the market for the last 2.5 years. But you're still not launched in India. So why it is Niraparib? Yeah, Jejula. Yeah. You still haven't launched in India. So, and sir, you told that I think what I track, your specialty is less than hardly 1% of sales, maybe Trelegy and Nucala put together. Maybe if I consider that to your forthcoming products, which are going to literally change the structure of the company in terms of the product portfolio, which you have presented, you know. So I just wanted to know, sir, I think 2 years back in your annual report, you had written that eosinophilic meningioma market, there are 9 lakh patients. It's written in your annual report. And today, you're talking about something only 1,000 patients, you know. So what type of investments you will have to require to get those type of patients, you know? Because these are the products which are biologics, maybe you will have to develop the market. So what type of front-end investments you may have to need to make it a 50 or 100 million products, which can really move the needle for a company like Glaxo, you know, because our size is as big as 3,000 crores.
Yeah.
So make a needle, you have to make at least 10% of sales, you know. So I just wanted to know your thoughts on those lines.
Happy to. By thousand, I didn't mean thousand. I meant thousands.
Yeah.
So in a few, five-figure thousands. Okay. Yeah. So that's not the four figures. So there is that potential, but it's not millions as what you see in the others. Look, some of these products are, as I said, either first in class or best in class. They need, so the investment that we are making, you can, let's, we talked about Zejula. Yes, we will be, you know, it's been launched globally. We had to do a clinical trial, whatever, and we are filing. And so the process is on, committed to bring that in. But let's talk about Shingrix, a new asset globally, $1 billion product already. But in India, you're talking about investments. We're creating a team, a set of people. Product is going to be launched in end of first half. But we are putting investments today to ensure that we understand the market, work with the key stakeholders in the market, and ensure that when we launch, people understand what this medicine is for. So for specialty medicines, right, I think unlike launching an antibiotic, unlike launching another painkiller, which I'm not demeaning that, they have their own space, these products will require significant investment way before launches. 9 months, 10 months, 12 months. And I'm not talking something that the industry does not do. Every other company also has the same methodology. We are also in that space. As I said, we will be focusing on some of these nearly around 8-9 months prior to launch. And that's a journey we are in. So yes, that's the kind of money and investment that we would need. Will these products be for everybody? I don't think so. They will be for certain category of people, certain set of people. And for them, we will definitely make it available.
Sir, my basically thrust of what type of investments will you require to make a 300, 400 crore brand, you know? Maybe you have to initially, first year, you want to spend 50 crores on that. Because maybe that's why, you have to come back and we have to create the market. You being the leader, I have to decide what I have to make the market. If I know I have a product potential of becoming a 500 crore, are you going to be shy of investing 50 crores in year one? Because the balance sheet supports, balance sheet can support any type of investments, you know. And definitely you would be willing to put.
Yeah, absolutely. And the answer to that question is yes. If I can make this product to 300-400 crores, we will, the first few years, definitely you invest much more than what you would. I mean, you're not looking at the P&L at that point of time. Look, as I said, it all depends upon the nature and the kind of the product that we are talking about. For a product like Shingrix, we are making that investment. I'm telling you right now, we are seeing it right now today, right? I'm sure next time around when I call you, you will say you made so much investment on Shingrix, you don't have the sales yet. So I'm sure you will do that, but we are making that investment right now. So for a product which is, now if I had to launch something else, which is in the general medicine space, I may not invest that level. So the products that I'm looking at in the future will all be, as I said, invest well before 8 to 9, 10 months before launch, create that market. I don't think I'm going to talk about will I spend 50 crores, will I spend 100 crores. It will be for an oncology product, which is run by maybe 250 key centers, 200 doctors. I may not need 50 crores.
Like Nucala specifically.
Yeah, Nucala again. What for a product like Shingrix, which can potentially be, it is a vaccine, nobody knows about it. It's a path-breaking vaccine, can be prescribed by potentially by every GP, right? And we have a 10-year data protection as of now, which is fantastic. So for that, and where there is an apathy for vaccines, I will have to invest. So those, and again, I'm not going to talk about numbers. Those investments are going to be significant. So it will depend upon the nature of the product and portfolio.
And if you see the last 3 years new product launches which we have done, right? So we've done both on vaccines as well as in pharma space products. So around 5.2% of our total sales is from these new products. We got Florex, we got Menvea, we got Nucala, we got now Trilogy. So 3-4 products we have, around 5% of our base of the last 3 years is from this new product. So it's not, that's that small, not to move the needle, 5% is significantly big. And the investments is completely dependent on what product, like Sridhar said, and we will try to as much as reallocate from the P&L. It's not all to be incremental. We'll try to find opportunities as well as incremental. Both will be coming through. So it's a commercial decision depending on the potential of that product in the market.
And so one thing, I've seen your peak margins maybe in the area of 32%, maybe some 10 years back, 10, 12, 15 years back. So do we see we will ever reach, or that's we can peak out at 25-27%? Nothing wrong in growing top line and being at 25%.
I don't want to comment on the future margins, but you know, if you bring in perspectives, there were NLEM waves we were going through. So we had significant waves of NLEM, which we had to experience from then what you're talking about, 32%. From there, we have gone down to a kind of 16-ish, 15%, and we've gone a long way from there, right? So yeah, we're continuously working on that. Whatever happens, we have to bounce back. That's where it is, you know.
Yeah. Hi, this is Gokul from Auriga Capital. So my question, just on the clarification, you mentioned the promoted brands are 62% of the overall sales and vaccines is another 22. So 84 is promoted, the rest would be the non-promoted brands. Is that?
Yeah. That's
so
right.
What is the remaining 16%? Is this that is something to be shred, is what you mentioned?
No, not exactly. Look, I wouldn't call them shred. Shred is... You know, we had to make some decisions, big ones. We have done. We are out. Most of it is out. But these are products which have a life of their own. These are products which have a long carryover effect. Yeah, thank you. And you know, we don't think by investing in any of that, I'm going to grow that significantly. So as I said, we made this conscious decision to focus on this 80%.
Okay.
But they are profitable brands. They're not dragging me at all.
Should we assume that this 16% of the portfolio would be largely inflation driven growth and not much of volume growth over there?
In some cases you do get volume growth. Some cases very slightly have 1%, 2%, but the other ones it is more or less inflation.
Yeah, it's more inflation driven. Very low single digit
most of that
volume growth. Yeah.
And what would be the aspiration on the promoted brands? And
so far, as of now, it's been a double digit growth.
Okay. Fair. Secondly, on the parent has vertically divided the business into three segments. One is the general medicine, specialty, and vaccines. We are a more general medicines business, very little of specialty and 20-odd% from vaccines. So the parents' focus is to increase margins on the general medicines, while you may want to actually grow that business. So is there a misalignment over there where the R&D focus at the parent level may not be there and hence you are constrained by new brands or something which you want to grow these brands in India?
Look, so first of all, I think I'm actually pretty much aligned with what the global teams are doing. So what's my strength? My strength is general medicine. What is it that I don't have that is specialty? I'm getting that from the global portfolio. And vaccines is a space that I can grow and I'm getting some of the new assets. On the general medicine space, to me, I personally think, given more digitalization that is happening in this country, more online pharmacies, more kind of doctors, all of that, the penetration is going to increase. And these are the most relevant brands that I have in that penetration increases. As we speak today, what is it, around 35, 38, 40% penetration in India for healthcare? And if that increases by another 5, 7, 10%, the impact that we could have with some of our current general medicine portfolio is huge. So whatever may be the group's aspirations at a global level, because global level we're driven by innovation in some of the other markets, our aspirations, emerging markets aspirations for us, and as I said, I'm a big contributor to emerging markets, is continue to grow significantly in the general medicine's portfolio. I'm not the only country in that space. Most of the emerging markets country are in a very similar space, and the focus is continue to grow double digits.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Ravi Purohit from Simple Securities Investment Management Private Limited. So one clarification on septum. I think in the DPCO, is it septum injectable or is it the septum, the tablet form has also been included? Because if it's the tablet form which has been included, then the...
It's not been clarified.
Because when you mentioned it contributes to 1% of your revenue, I assume it's the injectable. The tablet form would be much bigger, right?
Yeah, it's around 3%, 2-3% tablet.
Oh,
again, none of that is clarified. I don't want to sit here and speculate, and I have no insider knowledge of what's going to happen.
I just wanted to clarify that. Second question is, at any point of time, how much inventory sits in the system with the chemist shops? In a sense, in the chemist shops. So, for example, when I do a channel check, I realize that the entire derma portfolio of us, the pricing has already changed from 1st of April, right? So already 8-10% or 7-8%. I think a lot of creams have... when I see the Calpols and the Augmentins, I don't see any price changes, right? So maybe the inventory is from the previous fiscal. So at any point of time, what is the duration?
Yeah, so I won't be able to tell you exact chemist shops, but in the markets, it's anywhere between 35 to 45 days is what we have, depending upon the nature of the portfolio.
Okay.
Right?
And have we taken price increases on Augmentin and Calpol, or we have not? If you could confirm or not.
What do you mean pricing? You mean the normal and those pricing increases?
Yeah.
They're yet to hit the market, right? I mean, we have enough. Hopefully, quarter threes are generally the biggest quarter for us. Right? When I say quarter three, I meant for the calendar, for the whole year. So this quarter, and you will see some of those new prices starting to hit the market this quarter around.
The last question. So if we historically see, some of the other participants have mentioned that we were industry leading 10 years back. Today we are not even in the top five in terms of growth. Same happened with the parent also, right? The pharmaceutical business, guys like AstraZeneca, Abbott, a lot of companies outgrew GSK at the global level as well, right? And which is where this need to break up the company and sharpen the focus, consumer division and pharma division. And now that the division has happened, does the focus sharpen in India as well? And therefore the question is, are 2-3 new product launches enough? Whereas we've seen a lot of your MNC peers, India, launching 10, 15, 20 products every year. So is there something that that's going to change for us? And
look, I don't know who's launched 15, 20. I mean, I'm not too sure which would that be. But 10, 20. I mean, look, I'm not going to talk about 20 products of those. But look, what I think I will bring in is the innovation assets that are coming out of that. Look, in terms of what we were 10 years ago to what we are now, as I said, it's not something. Situation was different, thinking was different. Today, I want to be leader in the markets that I play and that I can play. Right? I'm not in. Yes, if you put in the entire diabetes and cardiovascular market, I'm not even in the top 10. Right? So that does have an impact. But I'm pretty convinced that with portfolio that I have, I can continue to grow my top line. I can continue to, as Juby was saying, focus on my margins. And I think I have space there. I have two phenomenal areas where my muscle I can increase significantly. Adult vaccine portfolio, new assets. New assets, will I launch 10 a year? Absolutely not. I can tell you sitting here, I don't think I have the bandwidth or the capability or I can do well with that. Will I have at least a few launches every year based on what I would see? So I think the focus has been be selective of what you want to launch, when you want to launch, but do that well, right? And you will see that with Trelegy. You will see that with Shingrix. You will see us getting ready for launches 8-10 months before so that when the launch happens, it's not the slow, we take off much faster. So that's how I would state it. The focus on India, I personally think, again, I'm not going to comment about the group. What I can say about for me in India, this is the best possible thing that has happened for me. Because as I said, India is one of the few markets where I have scale and size. I have trust. I have equity. and I walk in. So that is a big positive for me from general medicines. What I need to build is my specialty portfolio without diluting my current strength that I have and my vaccine. So I'm pretty clear we are on that path. Will I become a number one? Look, honestly, I'm not even thinking about that. I don't think about that at all. I want to be relevant in the spaces that I am in, and I want to grow in the spaces that I am in. And I think if I can do that, that's a win for me.
Thank you, Sridhar. We have last two questions. If you permit, we'll just extend beyond the allocated time. We have a question from Sameer Baisiwala. Sameer, hi. If you can pose your question either to Sridhar or to Juby. Over to you, Sameer.
Yeah, thank you so much. So the quick question is for the represented market that you are in, which is acute, which is antibiotics, derma, what's the sort of market growth that these categories have? I mean, is it fair to say that you are by definition in the low growth areas?
I think that, yeah, well, on that base, if the market is growing by 8 to 9%, I don't know if, I mean, though markets are, because again, given the under-penetration, I still think these markets will continue to grow at 8 to 9%. The derma market is growing much faster, though.
Okay, and if you can share your thoughts on, you know, the bigger towns versus smaller towns. So, you know, how do you think about these two markets? What's the sort of penetration that you have? Are you deploying more field force? Are you tapping more doctors in the smaller towns?
No, I think look at in terms of our people, I think we've gone through an exercise, looked at it very closely. We think there is more for us to gain greater productivity of where we are operating in. Look, we cover, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, around 160, 170 towns across the country easily. And I think maybe more, a little bit more. But I think we are not adding any more customers. We are adding any more feet on the ground. We are looking at enhancing our productivity with our existing customers. In terms of our growth, obviously we are getting a higher growth from smaller cities compared to places like some other bigger cities. But if you look at cities like Delhi, Bombay, Bangalore, Chennai, given the corporatization that I see in these places. These places have a normal tendency to get a higher set of growth, especially for the kind of products that I have, which is fundamentally in the acute space or the antibiotics.
Thanks. One final, if I may, with your permission, what's the sort of how much of your cost is really imported, and have you already felt the impact of the depreciating rupee?
Yeah, I think we got roughly 800 crores of imported cost base, okay? And we have roughly, if you see the FY22 financials, we got around 5 crore impact in that full year on depreciating US dollar versus rupees. So it's not material from the scheme of things. It's roughly 5 crore impact we have in the financials, reported financials.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Sameer. Thank you, Juby. Last question that was actually typed online, and after that we will close with closing remarks from Sridhar. Mitesh from Nirmal Bang, he says, post-COVID, multiple companies have additional capacity in vaccines and are looking to launch different vaccines. Can we see competition intensified?
I do think that's an... You know, vaccines are a space which is exciting everybody. So yes, do we expect vaccines to come in? Yes. I think what GSK brings to the table is the freshness of its portfolio, the kind of newer assets that are happening globally, the acquisitions that we are making globally. I think for us, it's going to be how do we continue to bring some of the newer assets of vaccines into this country. So yes, you will see more vaccines coming into the market. I think it's a good thing. There is more noise in the market. There are more people who will understand vaccines. So I'm not averse to more competition coming in. I personally think it's a good thing. more of them come and talk about adult vaccination, it'll be fantastic. But yes, I think I am in a very strong space as GSK, given the newness of my portfolio and the pipeline that I'm coming. And on the pipeline, I can be pretty sure on vaccines, I potentially will get most of those into this country.
Thank you. Thank you, Sridhar. With that, before we close, any closing remarks for those?
First of all, thank you for coming. Really wonderful to speak to all of you face to face, and you get this opportunity a few times. Thank you for coming. And again, from a GSK standpoint, my only, you know, my only message or my only focus is going to be do a few things, do them well, focus where you can, you know, change what you can change, and you know, ensure that at the end of the day, whatever you do makes value for the patients. That's our key mantra. Thank you for all of you to come.
Great. Thank you all for joining online, and thank you for all those who came here. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. We will now disconnect the call. Moderator, if you can disconnect the call. Thank you.